Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. And I want to especially thank Marie, who actually mailed in a donation. And before we do get started, I did want to clarify a couple things regarding these Johnny Dollar episodes. First of all, Monday, we will always have, through the next 58 weeks, in two episodes, 15-minute episodes of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Wednesdays and Fridays, usually this will be the format, two on Wednesday and one on Friday. Now, there are a couple, there are four serials where one part is missing. In those cases, we'll just have two on Monday and two on Friday with a special on Wednesday. In addition, there is one six-part serial, and so we'll have two on each day. Also, a lot of these yours truly Johnny Dollar five-parters were serialized from previous episodes of not only yours truly, Johnny Dollar, but other programs such as CM Spade and Richard Diamond. So I will actually mention, if I know and I have the information, what script it was based on. I've got a couple places on the internet. So if you think you know, hold your answer until after Friday, because I may already have the info. All right, well, now it's time to get into today's episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. It's time for The McCormick Matter, Part 3 and Part 4.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Dules Martin.
Lieutenant Martin?
Yeah, that's right. I got a message you called while I was out and left this number.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about the McCormick case, Lieutenant.
McCormick?
$100,000 burglary out on Long Island back in 1951.
I was the officer in charge. Who are you?
Insurance investigator. I got a tip that an ex-convict named Joe Panny might have pulled it. I'm at Panny's hotel.
Well, let me know how you make out.
Say, listen, his room's been torn apart. Every inch of it's been searched. And when I came here tonight, I got socked by a woman with a gun.
Give me that address.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Allied Casualty and Insurance Company Limited, Markham Building, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the McCormick matter. Expense account, item 7, $2, two drinks. For myself and Lieutenant Dules Martin, NYPD. A big swarthy man who seemed to know what he was about. Martin looked over the damage done by the unknown ransacker of Joe Panny's room, questioned the clerk who was unable to furnish any helpful information, then, because Joe Panny was officially a parole violator, ordered a general pickup.
Hey, should be able to get our hands on him pretty soon, Dollar.
I hope it's that easy, Lieutenant.
Any reason why it shouldn't be fairly routine?
No, just a feeling, I guess. I don't know. This whole matter's been flimsy. The tip was weak, but it seems to be paying off. Nothing fits, though.
I don't quite get all this, Dollar. How'd you come in on this?
Old Mike Cairn died up at Sing Sing 2 days ago. Before he went, he told me he believed Joe Panny might have pulled the McCormick burglary. It didn't seem likely then, Panny being a small-time auto thief and whatnot. But now it does, in view of what's been happening lately.
Somebody sure wants something Penny might have, judging from that room.
I never saw one taken apart better, an expert search job.
Yeah.
Hey, Lieutenant, when you picked Joe Penny up, I'd like to be in on it. He's my only lead in this case, and I want to talk to him again.
That's not asking too much. Now, Dollar, about this woman you saw.
Pretty, about 30, dark hair, good dresser, wore a silver mink stole. The gun she socked me with was a little one, a 25 or maybe 32 automatic.
You think she might have done the searching in Joe's room?
What do you think? She was flustered and upset when I bumped into her, anxious to get away from the place. And, of course, the gun in her hand.
Yeah.
She sound familiar to you in this neighborhood?
No, no. Could be anybody.
Yeah. Well, that's about it, Lieutenant.
Yeah?
No, I got it.
Oh, thanks. I suppose you talked to McCormick, got the full story of the burglary from him.
Almost first thing, yeah.
Well, I remember him when it first happened. Nice enough, but strange, I thought. This business about somebody phoning the parole office ahead of you to get Joe Panny's address that stops me, though.
That's hard to figure.
You sure you're telling me everything?
Sure, I'm sure.
That part sounds crazy.
Not if somebody knew I was looking for him, wanted to get him first.
Yeah, but who?
How should I know?
Well, we'll see what we will see. Can I drop you anywhere?
No, thanks. I'll walk. You let me know when you pick him up.
Sure.
Two days passed, and I didn't hear from Lieutenant Martin. I finally phoned in, and a supplementary had turned up, no leads. Martin had men watching Joe's hotel. His former friends and acquaintances were being checked. Meanwhile, I decided to try and find out who the dark woman in the first stole had been. It seemed pretty obvious that she had just come from Joe's room, that she knew him or was connected with him in some way. So once more, I combed over Joe Panny's file at headquarters, this time looking for a woman's name. The only one mentioned was an ex-wife who had divorced him 6 years before. Her name was Iris Carter. At the Bureau of Vital Statistics, the marriage certificate and record of divorce proceedings gave me a composite picture of an unhappy and turbulent 3-year marriage. It also gave me a general description of Iris Carter that could very well fit the woman I'd seen briefly in the hallway outside Joe Panny's hotel room. There was a 6-year-old address to start on.
Is that you, Eunice?
No, ma'am. I'm not Eunice.
Oh, no, you sure ain't. You seen her?
I don't know. I really don't know her.
Oh. Well, what do you want?
I'd like to talk to the manager. I want some information.
What's your name?
Johnny Dollar.
What kind of information are you looking for?
Are you the manager?
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, I'm trying to locate a woman named Iris Carter. She might have used the name Iris Panny. She was married once to a man named Joe Panny. Lived here about 6 years ago. Were you here then?
I was.
Did you know her?
I did.
Did you know him?
Yeah. He went to jail.
Does she live here now?
She don't.
Do you have any idea where I can find her?
I don't.
Well, do you happen to know if she ever
Why
worked...
Why do you want her?
Just to talk to her. When did she move out?
Oh, long time ago. 5 years, maybe.
Uh-huh.
What's your business?
Insurance?
Oh.
Well, what's up?
Oh, nobody around here buys insurance.
Yeah, well, we don't have to go into that. If you can think of any place I might get a line on her, I'd appreciate it.
It seems to me she worked at a bookstore down the street.
Down what street?
Out there. Block or two down that way. I think she worked there. I don't know. You can try.
Thank you, I will.
My, you polite. You tip your hat.
So tell me... Do you remember what she looked like?
Sort of, yeah.
Well?
Oh, about as tall as I am. Nice. Pretty girl.
Blonde or brunette?
Dark hair. Almost black.
Know any of her friends when she lived here?
No. No, I couldn't tell you that. Why?
Oh, I might look up one of them and ask her about her, that's all.
Yeah, you ask at that bookstore. I think she worked there.
The bookstore Iris Carter Panny had worked in was as dismal as the neighborhood. The proprietor, a Mrs. Olds, yielded a little more helpful information than Iris Carter's former landlady. Yes, Iris had worked there for about 6 months. She'd quit almost 5 years before. No, she didn't know where to find her. Expense account, item 8, $1.02, lunch. I had it in a neighborhood diner called the Showboat, a place where Mrs. Olds said Iris Carter had frequently eaten. The restaurant manager remembered Iris vaguely. She also remembered Iris's boyfriend. I asked for a description. She did better than that. She gave me his name, occupation, and address. An old rehearsal hall 2 blocks away. The five-man combo working there was really putting it out. Yeah. And the minute I saw him, I knew the boy wearing the trumpet was the one I was looking for. Just good-looking and smooth enough to go with a girl Iris Carter sounded like. Smooth trumpet, too.
Okay, guys. Take five.
I'm looking for Jack Lang.
You found him.
I'm Johnny Dollar. Could we talk a minute?
That's about all I got, Mr. Dollar. Want to smoke?
No, thanks.
Oh, man. Gets real tired out about this time of day.
Yeah, imagine it does. The way you put it out.
Well, everybody to his own racket. What's yours?
Insurance investigating.
Okay. Now what?
Well, I've been asking around the neighborhood, and they tell me you once knew a girl named Iris Carter, or Iris Penny.
Iris Carter. Go on.
I'd like to find her and talk to her, and I thought you might be able to help me.
Go on.
I want to talk to her ex-husband, most of all. I thought somehow she might know where to find him these days.
He's in the can.
He was released 3 weeks ago.
No.
Any ideas?
No.
I thought finding her might be a shortcut to him.
I wouldn't think so. They were all washed up when I knew her.
When was that?
5 years ago. She hadn't seen him for over a year then.
Uh-huh.
She didn't have much use for him. I don't blame her.
How long did you know her?
No. We went together for a while she worked at some crummy bookstore. Then she moved away, and I didn't see her after that. I think she said something about going back to Ohio.
You think?
I don't remember offhand.
Well, let me put it this way. As far as I know, she's in no trouble. The one we want is her ex-husband. You'd be helping a lot if you could tell me where to find her.
I don't know. I honestly don't know, and I sure wish I did. I'd like to find her myself.
Why?
Well, when she went with me, wasn't any good. I think she just walked out because she was tired of losers. Sick up to here, you know what I mean? Can't blame her. He gave her a pretty bad time. I didn't do much better. But now I got something. It's just a little five-piece outfit. Not much, but something. I'd like to show it to her and say, Iris, this is mine.
You kind of had it bad, huh?
Bad as a guy like me can get it. I know I'll probably never see her again as long as I live, but boy, if another one like her ever shows up, I'm going to be ready, Dad. Ever see her?
No, she must have been something.
Yeah. Take a look. Nice, huh?
Yeah. I take it back.
What back?
About seeing her. I've seen her.
When? Where?
2 nights ago in the hallway outside Joe Penny's room.
You sure?
I'm sure. She hit me with a gun before she left. The picture he had flipped out of his wallet was old and well thumbed. It showed a sultry kind of face that could have been 20 or 30 or 40. A wide, frank, smiling, happy mouth. Not the kind of girl I would imagine could ever be married to a Joe Penny. But there was no doubt about it. She had been married to him, and I had seen her. On my way back to the hotel, I dropped in to check with Lieutenant Martin.
Hi.
Hi. Doing any good? Any lead on Joe Penny?
Nothing so far. This may take longer than I thought at first.
Well, I've been out looking for his ex-wife. I didn't find her, but I found a few people who knew her. She was the one at his hotel the other night. Name's Iris Carter.
You sure?
Positive. I saw her picture.
We better try to pick her up, too. I'll put it out right away.
Fine. Well, I'll keep in touch.
Wait a minute. Don't go.
Huh?
We had some action here today. Sit down.
Thanks.
Julian McCormick called up, reported you. He said you came out there bothering him a couple days ago. He said he doesn't want to be bothered.
Well, I only talked to him to get his story on the burglary.
And I told him as long as you didn't break the law, there was nothing we could do to stop you from investigating. But he didn't like it.
He seemed perfectly willing to cooperate with me when I talked to him before.
Yeah, well, sometime these writs... Excuse me. Martin here. That's right. Well, how long ago? Okay. Well, they found your boy, Joe Penny.
What?
Yeah. He's on his way to the morgue. Harbor Patrol picked up his body a couple of hours ago, loaded down with slugs.
Some case.
And that ain't all, Johnny.
Huh?
His feet were burnt.
Johnny Dollar.
Frank Porter at Allied Casualty. How's it going, kid?
I don't know.
You ever find Joe Penny?
The Harbor Patrol found him floating around the harbor. He'd been shot and his feet were burnt.
What? Gee whiz, torture. Well, what can I do to help?
Find a girl who was once married to him.
Joe Penny had a wife?
Yeah, she wears a mink stole these days and carries a gun. She's tied up with it somewhere. Her name's Iris Carter.
Iris Carter? You've met her?
Just long enough to get slugged with her gun.
Well, wait a minute. I'd like to get it all straight. Can I come over?
I'll be here.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of a man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Allied Casualty and Insurance Company Limited, Markham Building, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the McCormick matter. Expense account, item 9, $14 even, secretarial services. I dictated a detailed report of the $100,000 McCormick case. I did it for two reasons. One, to make certain that Allied and the New York police were thoroughly informed of my part of the matter. And two, to review the case for my own benefit. One of the key figures, Joe Penny, was a murder victim. Attached is a copy of that report. I tried to cover as closely as possible my conversation with Mike Cairn at Sing Sing when he tipped me off that Joe Penny had something to do with the McCormick burglary of 5 years ago. Also, one conversation with Joe Penny, his subsequent disappearance and murder. I had a copy for Frank Porter when he showed up at my room. He read it from top to bottom.
Gee whiz, Johnny, if this isn't something. You come here for Joe Penny, looks like he did the McCormick job, now he's dead. You're stopped. What can you do?
Find his wife, maybe?
You're doing this at your own expense, aren't you?
Oh, I think your company will pay for it in time.
You have to recover the stuff.
I know.
You think you will?
I think so, yeah.
Well, your key man's dead. You have to start all over again.
Maybe not. I don't really know whether Joe Penny was my key man or not. I still can't see a small-time auto thief working a big, slick safe burglary.
Every indication is that he was the one.
I know. I'd like to find that girl, Iris Carter, and talk to her about it. She's connected with it.
No, from what you say on the paper, yeah, very much. Oh, gee whiz, I feel like a fifth wheel. I'm not helping you a bit. You know, I handled this case for the company when it first broke. I worked with Lieutenant Martin for 6 months on it, and we didn't turn up a thing. You're on it 3 or 4 days, and you have all kinds of action.
Well, I must have stepped in at the right time.
Yeah. Johnny, somebody gunned Joe Penny down. Now, I know you like to work alone and do things your own way, but be careful if you stay on this. I get worried when somebody starts shooting.
Oh, sure. I didn't get that, though.
What?
If I keep on this, I wouldn't let it go now if my life depended on it. I'm going to find that woman, and I'm going to find the stuff.
Sure. Well, gee whiz. Don't let anything happen to you.
I won't. I talked some more with Frank Porter about the case. He repeated his offer in the name of Allied Casualty to help if he could. I told him I'd take it up on it if anything came up at all. He left. I was at Central Police Station 10 minutes later. And 5 minutes after that, Lieutenant Dules Martin was calling for the medical examiner's report on Joe Penny's death. A uniformed man brought it in. Martin shoved it across the desk at me.
The ME says Joe Penny's been dead about 48 hours or longer.
.225 slugs right through the chest, penetrated both lungs, one through the neck. It's very neat shooting at that range.
What range?
Oh, at least 20 feet, maybe longer. Not many people shoot 25s that well. It's a little gun.
A woman's gun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Now, let's talk about that woman you saw around there that night. Now, you say it was Penny's ex.
Yeah. Iris Carter. I don't know whether her gun was a 25 or 32.
Well, think about
it. I have.
Now, look, don't get sore with me. It's just that she looks like better than ever for opening this case up. I put her on in all points.
Sorry I got riled.
That's all right. Now, the ME thinks that Penny was killed before he was dumped in the water, possibly ambushed by someone he didn't know or didn't trust.
If he's right about the range, that'd fit in. Someone who knew him would do it close up.
Yeah.
Hey, wait. You said his feet were burnt.
Yeah, I got the pictures here to prove it. Yeah, take a look. And these are the glossies.
Uh-huh.
Now, these are the burns here, Della. Right here. Here and here.
Then he wasn't ambushed exactly.
Look, I don't know what he was, but this is the crazy part. He was already dead when this happened.
No rope marks on his legs or wrists. You don't sit still for burning, no matter how tough you are.
It's fascinating, huh? Someone shot him down, then tried to make it look like he was tortured for information first.
Cover up. He's supposed to look like he knew something or had something. And maybe he didn't know or have anything at all.
Well, how do you feel?
Lousy. If the burning was cover-up, then maybe the big search of his room was cover-up, too, to throw us off.
To throw you off. Not me. I wasn't in on it then.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's genuine.
What's that?
The corpse. An hour and a half later, a witness was delivered to the office of Lieutenant Martin. His name was Edmund Thompson. He sold papers in the dock area. Both Martin and I looked at him twice, and I could tell both of us were doubting the credulity of anything he might have to say.
Hi.
Hi. My name's Martin. This is Mr. Dollar.
Yes, sir. Glad to know you both.
Now, would you mind telling us everything you saw the other night?
Tuesday night? Yeah, it was Tuesday. Sure, why not? I saw this guy dumped in the water.
We understand that. Can you tell us the circumstances?
It's against the will of God.
Yes, it certainly is.
Against the laws of nature, too.
What did you see, Mr. Thompson?
I prayed for them both.
You tried, Dollar?
When did you pray?
Right after I saw him. Yes, sir.
On the street, huh?
No. I was on the vacant lot. I was cutting across towards the dock.
Oh.
Then I see this car pull up. Long black car. A lot of chrome on it. This fella jumps out and goes around at the back. He opens the trunk and he pulls this other fella out. Hoists him up and he carries him over the dock. Then he just lets him go.
Then you prayed.
Then I prayed. I was a little too scared to do anything else.
This car the man had.
Long black one, a lot of chrome.
Sedan or coupe?
What's the difference?
Two seats or one seat?
One seat.
Happen to get the license number?
All right,
let that go. How about the man? Can you describe him?
He stood there, looked down at the water, and started himself a cigarette.
Well, what kind of a face did he have? Dark, light, a mustache, what?
A devil's face.
Oh, swell. Now, what does that mean?
A devil?
Mr. Thompson, do you understand that we want to apprehend this man, that he's responsible for one man's death, and that he might harm someone else?
I'll pray for him. Pray for him all.
Well, how was he dressed?
Didn't notice.
Hat?
Don't know.
Coat?
Don't know.
But he had a long black coupe. Do you know the make?
Nope.
Would you know him if you saw him again?
Nope.
Look, when you saw him dump a body into the water, why didn't you notify the police?
Why should I?
It's police business.
Let them take care of their business. I'll take care of mine. Any of you fellas got a cigarette on you?
I left Lieutenant Martin brooding over his witness and went out for a bite of dinner. When I called him later, he hadn't learned anything more, so I decided to call it a night and went back to my hotel. I found a note waiting for me from Jack Lang, the bandleader friend of Iris Carter. Said he'd got a tip. She'd worked at one time at the Elmar Theater in the Bronx. If I learned anything, please let him know. He was still in love with her. Elmar Theater. I decided my night was far from over.
Hey, you. Buy a ticket out front if you want to look at the girl.
I only want to see one. Her name's Iris Carter. Does she work here?
I just told you, go buy a ticket out front.
Just tell me this. Does Iris Carter work here? Is the name familiar to you? Have you ever seen her or heard of her?
You give me any more trouble, I'll clutch. I told you, go out front.
Can't you answer a simple question? I'm looking for Iris Carter. Iris Carter.
You don't have to yell at mister. He never heard of it.
What?
Call me a cop, Gloria.
Never
this
mind,
guy's
cop.
Giving
never
me...
Never mind, I'll take care of him. Come on, you. Iris Carter, is that what you said?
Yeah.
I gotta change. I gotta get back on in 5 minutes.
Then I'll talk to you later.
You haven't got much to say. Stick around. I'll change back to the screen.
Okay.
I'm Gloria Ward. Who are you?
Johnny Dollar.
What do you want with Iris Carter?
I want to see her and tell her something.
Tell me.
Well, for one thing, her ex-husband's dead.
What?
Oh, better watch that screen.
Oh. Say that again.
Joe Panny, her ex-husband's dead.
No kidding. That no good bum is really dead.
Yeah. Where can I find her?
She don't work here no more. Hasn't worked here in 4 or 5 years. She quit.
Well, where is she? You took over from the old man out there when you heard me mention her name. You've satisfied yourself that I'm really looking for her, so suppose
don't
you...
Don't slip with me, mister. I'm not satisfied about anything.
Where is she?
She got herself married to a nice guy.
Good for her. Is she in town?
You sure you just want to see her and tell her Joe's dead?
That's about it. I thought maybe she might be able to help me and the police find out who killed him.
He was killed?
2 days ago. They found his body today.
How do you know about that? Are you a cop?
I'm an insurance investigator.
And you have to see it?
You want it put in writing?
Don't get in a huff. What I'm getting at is this. Quick change, huh? Now listen, Iris is good. You know what I mean? And she's married to a nice guy now. Will any of this make her trouble?
Not if she hasn't done anything wrong.
Well, I can tell you she hasn't. If it does make trouble, it'd be a shame. She's set up nice, and I like to see a girl set well, don't you?
Certainly.
I haven't seen her almost since she left here, but... Well, you look like a right kind of guy. I believe you.
Thanks, Gloria.
She lives out in Long Island now. Her name's McCormick. Iris McCormick.
By the time I said goodbye to Gloria and walked out the stage door and got out into the alley, I thought I had most of it figured. The ex-wife of an ex-con married a wealthy Long Islander named McCormick. When the honeymoon was over, the safe was robbed. Walking out that alley, I was wondering whether to phone the police or Allied Casualty first.
Been hit.
Oh, it isn't bad. Did you see him?
I didn't see nobody.
The car. See the car. The one that just gunned out.
Oh, the car. We had a long black coupe, a lot of chrome. A fella didn't have his lights on. Hey, that's against the law.
Hey, you need help, mister.
No. No, I'm all right.
Now, here's our star, Bob Bailey, to tell you about tomorrow's episode.
Thanks. Tomorrow, the end of the trail of a .38 caliber slug. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Hey,
Welcome back. Well, a couple of things to note about this serial. The first thing that stands out to me is they do a really good job of finding believable ways to recap the story for the listeners. Now, oftentimes, particularly, you know, when we listen to the Superman serials, which were also done by Jack Johnstone, they would often have, it'd be somewhat clunky, unbelievable as they managed to retell the whole story over the course of two episodes. One other key difference here that I should note is with the Superman serials, over on the old-time radio Superman show, I actually kind of make it a secret, not something I'll reveal on the air, as to how many parts there are in a serial, as to not spoil the suspense. You know, there's a couple that are like two or three parts, though some of them can extend up to 20, I think some close to 30 parts. This one is a lot less variance. Most of these serials were five-parters. There was one six-parter and one nine-parter. So a whole lot more dependability. I think we're also seeing a great quality of storytelling and acting. They're really getting a chance to develop the story without getting something that sprawls a whole lot. It was worth noting at this point, it was kind of an ideal time to have a show like this, because there were, you know, a lot of mystery dramas had made their way to television. They were pretty simple. These were half-hour programs, all resolved in a single part. What you have here over the course of 5 days is a full-fledged kind of radio mystery movie that's playing out for us, and isn't far from the length of the 1970s NBC mystery movie wheel films. So we've got some great complexity, also just some great acting. Now, I listened once all the way through all of these serials. I don't remember all of the solutions, but I do remember the one to this one. You'll definitely want to listen on Friday when we will bring you the climax. It really is a bit of a surprise, or at least it was to me, just the way it ended. Well, we do turn to listener comments and feedback, and iTunes review from Harry, who says, "I really like this podcast. I'm 20 years old. I remember my dad would listen to old radio or watch old movies. Back then, I really didn't enjoy them. Now, I can't get enough of them. My favorite show is Johnny Dollar featuring John Lunn. I can't figure out why so many people dislike him. I think he's the best Johnny Dollar. My second show is How to Save a Life. Really disappointed that it's over. Skipped ahead just to listen to it. Still a little behind, but catching up fast. Wanted to say thanks and keep up the work. Amazing work. P.S. Really like your commentary." Well, I think it was referring to A Life in Your Hands. I'm glad you're enjoying it. The thing I think that makes John Lunn, and to a lesser extent, the pre-Bailey Dollars, not viewed as well, is a lot of people were first introduced to Johnny Dollar through Bob Bailey. I knew a gentleman from work who he grew up, you know, in the 1950s, and he listened to Bob Bailey as Johnny Dollar on the radio. And, you know, in terms of radio detectives, it was, for most of its run, the not only the main game, but pretty much the only game in town in terms of regular detective shows. And I think that, you know, you take a listen to the quality that, you know, that we're hearing here and the growing complexity of the plots, particularly facilitated by these 15-minute serial formats. And I think that if there was any virtue or any benefit in playing all of the John Lunn, Johnny Dollars, it's what, and Edmund O'Brien and Charles Russell for that matter, is that I hope it built some appreciation for the talents and abilities of those actors who all brought their own unique spin to Johnny Dollar. And we turn now actual written letter from Marie, who says, "I've had many hours of entertainment from Dragnet and Great Detectives. Thank you." And thank you, Marie. truly appreciate it and appreciate your support of today's program. Finally, Clark says, hello, my name is Clark from Alberta, Canada. I'd just like to say I'm 27 years old, been listening to old radio shows since I was a little boy, and this app is so awesome. Now I can listen to old time radio whenever I want. Thanks so much. Well, thanks so much for listening over there in Alberta, Clark. And that will actually do it for today. We will be back tomorrow with Sherlock Holmes. Then join us on Friday. We will play Policewoman for you, and then we'll bring you the thrilling conclusion to the McCormick matter. In the meanwhile, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.